Okay, so good evening. Pesach is coming, and tonight I decided to speak with you about what I call different matzah minhagim in different communities. Are they all equally good? Now, are they all equally good has two meanings. Do they all taste as good? Right? There are different communities that have different types of matzahs. Now, I'm not talking about like chocolate chip matzah. That obviously would taste very good, but that's not Pesach type of matzah. The type of matzah could be yotzei the mitzvah at the Seder. So there are different communities that have different types of matzahs. We're not going to get into tonight the big difference between machine matzah and hand matzah, although that obviously was a big discussion for many, many years. There should be some other sheets down there. But let's talk about matzahs. My brother-in-law used to teach in the yeshiva of Flatbush for a while. And one time, he in one of his classes, he asked a test question. Obviously, Dr. Eliyahu was the principal. Everything had to be in Hebrew. So he asked a question, Ma tam mitzvahs kashrus? Now, there was a jokester in the class who understood or who read the question to be Ma tam matzos ksheros. And he wrote that matzos ksheros taste really bad. It tastes like brittle cardboard with weak echoes of sawdust and ash. That's basically what our type of matzah tastes like.
But didn't matzah used to...
But matzah used to not be like that.
It used to be
and
like
matzah,
the Sephardi...
among certain Sephardi communities until today, is basically the same as our pita. I went online before I came tonight. How do you make pita? You know, pita tastes very good. How long does it take to make a pita?
Not that long.
Not that long. You're going to make a pizza in like 3 minutes. Right? That's less than 18.
Yeah, so it's in 18.
Pizza is probably kosher as matzah. In fact, a friend of mine pointed out to me a few years ago when Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos, so everyone gets very nervous about what you do for that first Shabbos morning meal.
Yeah.
Everyone gets very nervous. And the concern is that we don't want crumbs because... So this family decided that what they would do is they would use pita. Okay, because pita rips easily and there's no crumbs. Well, there's a problem because the Yerushalmi says that if you eat matzah on Erev Pesach, ki ilu bo el arusasu b'veis chomif, which is a bad thing. So therefore, maybe you should not eat pita, and I think that's probably correct. It happens that the type of pita that we get have like certain yeast and other ingredients are added, so it's not just pure flour and water, but you can get pita with shmura flour, and that would be much more similar to the type of matzah that they used to have. Let me give you a proof of this, and then what we're going to try to do is analyze why it developed that the minhag of Ashkenazim is that we have thick, brittle, pardon the expression, lousy-tasting matzahs. How did that develop? So, look in Shulchan Aruch. The last page, page 3, towards the top. So, Shulchan Aruch, Archaim Simin, Tav Samach Aleph, Se'if Gimel. Right? It says, Matzah she'ne'efes ad she'imparsin osa ein chutin nimshachin mimena yotzin ba. If matzah is baked to the point that when you break it open, strings don't pull away from it, such matzah is matzah that you fulfill the mitzvah with. I fulfill the mitzvah with matzah that when I pull it apart, the strings... Now, what does that mean? What type of strings? The strings in the matzah are obviously like a looser, doughier type of substance. The strings is not something that we have in our matzahs. In the hard, thin, brittle matzahs, you are not going to have any strings ever. Right? This idea only makes sense if you have soft matzahs. Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Alter Rebbe, gives a test for how you know if the matzah is really baked enough. And the test is that you take your finger and you push it down and you see, like almost like a cake with a toothpick, no? Does it come up on the toothpick? Does it come up on your finger? Now, if I try that on my hard, brittle matzah, I end up with matzah meal.
That could work.
Right? So, this... Obviously, the type of matzah that was used, and this is fairly recent, that we are using the hard, brittle matzahs. Now, the information I'm saying now is mostly from an article that appears in the journal Ar Yisrael. Ar Yisrael is a journal that comes out in Muncie. In volume 50 of the journal Ar Yisrael, Rabbi Baruch Oberlander, who has a lot of time on his hands, he's the rabbi of a shul in Budapest. I don't think you have that many. My guess is that, you know, at the smallest minyan we have here in Mount Sinai, we have more people than they have in the entire year in the shul in Budapest. Yeah, that's probably my guess. So Rabbi Oberlander wrote an article trying to trace the practice of matzah baking from the Gemara through the Rishonim. So let's learn some of what he says and how we got to where we are with our lousy tasting matzah.
Is he talking about regular matzah or shmur matzah?
So when we talk about matzah, now we're talking about matzah for the Seder, but most people bake the same type of matzah for the Seder and for the rest of Yontif as well. Zakti Gemara, Pesachim Lamed Vavam, and Bey is going over to Lamed Zayin Amar Aleph. Tan Rabbanan, Ein Ofen Pas Ova B'Pesach Divrei Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says, don't make thick bread on Yontif. Beis Hillel Matirin. Beis Hillel says you can. V'kam Pas Ova, how much is thick bread? Amar Rav Huna, Tefach. Shekei Matzina B'Lechem HaPonim, Tefach. Okay? It's a Tefach. A Tefach is about, what, 2.8 inches? Right? Depends how big your fist is, but that's what a tefach is. So you should not make bread that's a tefach according to Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel sounds like it's absolutely permitted. The issue over here is that if the bread is going to be too thick, there is some concern that there will be chametz. Because when it's thicker, obviously it might not bake through and through. This is the way almost all the Mefarshim understand the Gemara. So Beis Shammai says, because of this concern, don't make it. Beis Hillel says, it's okay. It's not a problem. Now, Judaism follows Beis Hillel. So it would seem like it's okay. And the proof text that you can have matzah tel tefach is from the Lechem HaPonim in the Beis HaMikdash. Lechem HaPonim was not chametz, it was a matzah. Yeah. And it could be until a tefach. There's a shvira Rambam in Hilchos Tmidim Musafim. The Rambam in Hilchos, or there's a shvira Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam in Hilchos Tmidim Musafim. The Kesef Mishnah writes that nowhere do we know the shear of the Lechem HaPonim. We don't know it anywhere. And he thinks that it is about seven etzbo, seven fingers, which is more than a tefach. Why the Kesef Mishnah missed our Gemara is a great mystery that people have been trying to figure out for many, many hundreds of years. But the fact is, the Gemara says that the Shir of the Lachem upon him is a tefach. Maskev from Rav Yosef. Im Amr Bezeriz, and Yom Rishainan Zeriz, and Amr Pasamer, Yom Pasha'inan Mela. Basically, what Rav Yosef is saying is that, one second, just because the Lachem Haponim, right, could be until a tefach, doesn't mean our matzah could be until a tefach. In Yom Tanu Shomatech, as Yom Tanu Shocheres, the Gemara has like four or five different differences between the Lechem HaPonim and our matzah. And therefore, Rav Yosef is saying that we reject the comparison to Lechem HaPonim. Now, if I reject the comparison to Lechem HaPonim, so what should the halacha be?
But I don't understand your question.
The Gemara first says that there's a machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Can I make thick matzah?
Right.
Right? Beis Hillel says yes, Beis Shammai says no. Right? Beis Shammai who says, right, the shear, the measurement of thick matzah, beyond which point is a machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, is a tefach that we derive from Lechem HaPonim. Then the Gemara says, oh, you can't prove anything from Lechem HaPonim. Because Lechem HaPonim was done in the Beis HaMikdash, was done by the Kohanim. Kohanim is reason, they're very careful. They were amelim, they worked harder on it. Right? They had better types of ovens. So therefore,
Beis Shammai, and you can't have.
So therefore, maybe it could be that even according to Beis Hillel, even Beis Hillel, who's lenient, right? Or maybe you can't be lenient on the bread, on matzah, that is thick. Because although I'm lenient by Lechem HaPonim, that I can make it to a tefach, maybe by matzah, that we are not as careful, just naturally, Kohanim are more careful, so maybe by matzah, I don't have the leniency until a tefach.
Okay, so then
right? I could say it like that. Let's just try to move on, yeah?
But we follow Beis Hillel.
I understand. So Beis Hillel says it's permitted.
Right, so if it's permitted, right? And we're saying so we now, should be more strict, then how is it?
So maybe what the Gemara is saying with this rejection is that even though Beis Hillel, the dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel can't be, you can't have a dispute about matzah. Maybe matzah everybody would hold is a problem. Right? Maybe the only time that might possibly be okay is by Lechem Haponim. So then the Gemara says, Am Reb Yirmi Bar Abba, She'ilus is Rebbe B'Yichud. I asked the famous Rebbe, the specific Rebbe, who is that? Umano, it's Rav. Ikka da'ami, it's Reb Yirmi Bar Abba, Am Rav. She'ilus is Rebbe B'Yichud. Umano, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Pas Ova means Pas Meruba. My Korle Pas Ova, Mishum D'Nefisha B'Lisha. In other words, that there's a machlokes whether I'm allowed to make a full oven, whether I'm allowed to bake lots and lots of bread on Yontif. It's a machlokes because it might be considered tircha on Yontif. I'm not supposed to exert myself too much on Yontif. And the machlokes has nothing to do with thick bread. So halacha lemaisa from this gemara, what emerges? At first we say, according to Beis Hillel, what we care about is Beis Hillel, it's okay to make thick matzah. Now, by the way, soft matzah, by definition, has to be thicker than hard matzah. And the reason for that is, bakers, something that is thick and hard, right, won't be edible at all. No? If it's really thick and really hard, it would be like biting into a piece of wood. Is that correct?
Probably.
Agreed?
Yeah.
Thick, hard, bad. Right? So, when the Gemara is discussing the thick matzah, right, this machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, we're talking about soft matzah. So far, so good. Now, Beis Hillel permits it in stage one of the Gemara. But then in stage two of the Gemara says, no, maybe we have to be more strict. So what emerges lahalacha? It's not abundantly clear. I could learn this Gemara two ways. I could learn the Gemara that all we're doing is we're rejecting the proof from Lechem Haponim. But Lahalocha, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel still are disagreeing, the same as it was before. But don't prove anything from Lechem Haponim, because Lechem Haponim is not germane. I could say it like that. Alternatively, I could say that no, what the Gemara is saying is that if there's no proof from Lechem Haponim, that means that maybe even Beis Hillel would say it's forbidden. So what we'll see in a minute is that there are many opinions who take the second approach, and this will lead us into evil Ashkenazi, bad-tasting matzah land. Yeah.
Could you please define some terms, matzah versus lechem?
Okay.
And
since
we're talking...
Very hard to define. But basically, matzah is matzah. We know what matzah looks like. Lechem is bread. Matzah technically is a type of bread. When we speak about matzah, we speak about the thinner things. Halachically, the difference between matzah and chametz is whether the process of leavening began, which we are assuming means if there was 18 minutes from the beginning of production until taking it out of the oven, then it is chametz. Less than 18 minutes is matzah. The Gemara technically has signs at what point it becomes chametz. When we were learning Pesachim in YU 4 years ago, so I did experiments with my students, in terms of the signs of the Gemara involve, like, whether it becomes weight on top and whether it cracks and this and that. We did it. You mix the flour and water. We did different types. The Gemara says that rice doesn't come lidei chimotz, no?
But
rice, it's a machlokes Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. The Tanya Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri felt that rice does come lidei chimotz. The other Tanya said that rice doesn't come lidei chimotz. The Gemara says that rice comes lidei seirachon. We did an experiment in my classroom. Now, we didn't notice it after 18... What does seirachon mean? Seirachon means bad smell. I didn't expect it in my classroom. After 18 minutes, there was no difference. But after 10 days, the rice mixture stank like whatever. It was really bad, right? Now, the other ones did not smell so bad. That means, perhaps, that is what seirachon is. Now, what exactly chimotz means, this process of fermentation, which the Gemara describes as being like various types of cracks in the bread or in the dough. So there is an article in like the first issue of the Bar Ilan journal. Bar Ilan is like YU in Israel, basically. So in the first Bar Ilan journal, so there's an article by a chemist who tries to argue that there's a certain type of beta amylase that begins to break down after X number of times in various forms. Wheat is at a different time, barley is at a different time. That's why we don't make barley matzah, the practice is, because the Masorah, the tradition that we have of 18 minutes to create chametz, is a tradition that goes all the way back. We don't know exactly what the tradition is for barley, so we don't make barley matzah. Alternatively, we don't make barley matzah because the Torah says, L'man tizkor es yom tzeis l'meretz Mitzrayim. They're supposed to remember when you leave from Mitzrayim. And there's a statement in Chazal that Zechira is a human capacity and it comes from chita, which is a human food. So Urim is animal food, and it's kashal shikha to eat barley, the Gemara says in some places. So therefore, if I want to have a mitzvah that is l'man tizkar, so I shouldn't eat barley. That's what the Halakha Chasam Sofer says in one of his tshuvas. I don't think it makes any sense, but okay, that's what he says. Now, I mean, I said that, and I don't think it makes any sense. I mean, like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't, like, understand this. But, okay, but let's go back to where we are. So chametz means after 18 minutes, matzah means less than 18 minutes. So far, so good. Now, there is a concern, though, that certain things, even if I cook them for 18 minutes, it might not get fully cooked. And therefore, the possibility is that it comes out of the oven, it won't be fully cooked, it will continue to bake outside of the oven, and it might become chametz then. Right? That is the concern with the thick matzahs. But it's unclear from the Gemara if this is a genuine concern or not. The Gemara says, according to Beis Hillel, it's okay. And perhaps all we're doing is we're rejecting the proof. Which would mean, la halacha, thick matzah is still great. However, Rashi, in the Rashi comments on this Gemara, this the Mishnah Berurah dug up this Rashi. The Gemara says, pas meruva. In the answer of the Gemara says that what the machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel is am I allowed to bake a lot of bread on Yontif? Am I allowed to make a lot of matzah? Right? So Rashi says, Pasuk Bread means harbe charoren biyachad, v'lav mishom chimotz nakat la. We're not talking about chametz. The concern is not because of chametz. U'becharoren dakin ka'amar. We're talking about thin loaves. Mishom dekatarach tircha delo tzarechu. And the concern is because of too much tircha. Now, what Rashi is saying is that in the conclusion of the Gemara, when we speak about pas meruba, at the machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel is, can I make a lot of bread or not a lot of bread, a lot of matzah, not a lot of matzah? That's the issue. Says Rashi, oh yeah, but whatever matzah you make has to be charorin dakin, has to be thin loaves. Good? Now, what is not defined, however, is what does thin mean. Right? Like, for example, you could ask people, are you thin? Yeah, sure, I'm thin. Right? Everyone wants to be thin. What thin means is, like, a subject of a question, always. So, the practice, the way Rabbi Oberlander has it in his article, the definition of thin was a lot thicker than it used to be. Than it is now. The definition of thin used to be a lot thicker than it is now. Everyone is assuming, or many are assuming, in the conclusion that you should have thin matzahs. But thin was defined in their times as being ka'uvi etzba, like a finger. A finger. Like a finger, that's basically around the size of a pita, no? Our matzah is what? I could get like 5 of them into one finger. No? So that is a much later development. He argues it's only 250 years old. But let's continue in the sugya.
Quick question, if I may. If the ancients used pita for their matzah, then Hillel's famous sandwich...
It makes so much more... So there are two ways of understanding the sandwich of Hillel, right? The sandwich could be that you used a pita. It was a shawarma.
Right.
Right? You have some lamb with some charif. Right, and you wrap it up with, hey, it's a shawarma, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Alternatively, the briskers are very into doing korech, right? Just you have to get out of functional fixedness, and then everything is great. If you wrap your lettuce around your matzah, then you're still wrapping it together. It just says that they wrapped it together. So you could take a piece of matzah, stick in the middle, and like wrap some lettuce around. No?
I like the shawarma idea.
I don't think so. I don't think these things are so, like, Yeah, I don't think the minhagim here are so firm that we'll say al titosh Torah simecha about these minhagim. That's what we're going to be discussing a bit. Now the Ritva in Pesachim writes that kevan da'afik de mitefach. Basically, the Ritva says that once the Gemara rejects tefach as a proof, the measurement of a tefach comes from lachem haponim. Once we reject tefach as the shear, v'lo ukmulo b'gemara shi'ura achrina lehetera less than the mevad pass of a klal. Right? There is only one measurement mentioned in the Gemara called tefach. That measurement comes from lachem haponim. We reject that measurement. Therefore, says the Ritva, we should not make thick matzah at all. Vizehu shenahagu ha'olam lasas matzah sholchova daka. Now, if you read the Ritva carefully, the Ritva is saying that there were two types of matzahs that they used to bake. They baked thicker matzahs also, and they would eat thicker matzahs throughout Yontif. But the matzah sholchova is the matzah they ate at the Seder, that matzah had to be very thin. There were practices until 150 years ago. You know, people are machmir on Tanur Rishon by the matzahs, that you try to get matzahs from the first baking of the oven because it's hotter. Right? My father is friendly with the Bustin Rebbe of Lawrence. So the Bustin Rebbe of Lawrence is the Mashgiach of Manischewitz Matzah Bakery. It's over the bridge in Newark. It's massive.
Mm-hmm.
The Manischewitz Bakery of Matzah, it's amazing. So Rabbi Horowitz is the Mashgiach there. So I get like an emergency call 2 years ago, right before Yontem. He's like, he could get some Tanur Rishon machine matzah, right, from the Manischewitz thing. And he knows that obviously the Rosh Yeshiva and YU would be really into this because Rav Soloveitchik only ate machine matzah. He didn't eat hand matzah. So which Rosh Yeshiva would really want this? So who did we find? Rabbi Reichman. Rav Shechter actually eats hand matzah, although in recent years he's entertaining the idea of eating soft matzah. That's sort of what we're...
Why is it that the Rabbi Soloveitchik did not eat...
Because he felt that you could have better kashra standards with machines than... Human error is the biggest cause of mishap ever. Machines are much better. No? Now, the only issue with machine matzah... I said I want to talk about machine matzah, but I guess I am. The issue with machine matzah is a question of lishma. Generally speaking, we paskin that you do make lishma. When you push the button, you say lishma, that makes the whole thing lishma.
Right.
Again, so I'm not saying that there are no poskim who would assume it's not good, but if your tzitzis are going to be kosher when they're made on the machine, so your matzah is also kosher when it's made on the machine, right? So the fact is that... How come most people don't use... machine matzah. Most people use hand matzah at the Seder.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Why? Your father used?
Because their father used
hand matzah. Because it looks more authentic.
Right.
Because.
I think it tastes better.
Yes.
But the hand matzah tastes better?
Yeah.
We could debate that point. but.
Oh, yeah, matzah.
The point is the Ritva has an interesting line. The Ritva says that the matzah of Chova, the matzah they use at the Seder, should be very thin. What that means, apparently, is that for the Seder, we have there is a requirement of Shmura or Yontiv. Shmura, make sure it's not Chometz. But at the Seder, we have a higher level of Shmura, right? Obviously, it has to be Lashma, but a higher level is that any Suffolk, usually if there's some sort of very far-fetched Suffolk, we'd assume the Matzah is okay. But at for the Matzah, the Seder, we have higher standards. Says the Ritva, since we have higher standards, we're worried, don't use the thick matzahs at the Seder, because they might end up being, right, possibly there's some concern there's going to be chametz inside. Mikol Malkam, he says, b'diyeved, it could be there's no iser until a tefach. That means, according to the Ritva, if I have matzah that is as thick as a tefach, b'diyeved, it's going to be a problem. You're not yotze at all, it's not matzah, right, because it's possibly chametz, if it's a tefach thick. Fine.
So
this idea...
Smells like Behil?
So we paskin like Beis Hillel, but even though we paskin like Beis Hillel, we still assume that the matzah should be as thin as possible, because since we reject the proof of a tefach, we reject the lechem aponim, so we assume that try to make the matzahs very thin. That's what he says. This same idea of trying to make the matzahs thin is found in the Rabbeinu Yeruchim. He says, Asur asus pashiyah ba'ob yo tefach, right? That is pashat im psachim v'hadak yosir mishubach. The thinner, the better. The thinner, the better. That's what he says. Now, this second part of the Rabbeinu Yeruchim does not make it to the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef has a question. How come the Torah leaves out the fact that you should not have matzah being as thick as a tefach? And not only does the Torah leave it out, but it's left out by the Rambam and the Rosh and the Ref. All the major Rishonim leave it out. So the Magen Avraham comments that, you know why we leave it out? We leave it out because we don't hold like this Gemara. When the Gemara begins, and the Gemara says, according to Beis Hillel, it's mutter, right? That means it's mutter to have thick matzah. End of discussion. And that's why the Rambam and the Rosh and the Rif, they leave it out, right? And we paskin that you're allowed to have thick matzah, even according to the Maskon and the Gemara, that we understand Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel is about pas merubah. The Magen Avraham is saying what that means is, yeah, there's a machlokas where they can make a lot of bread and not a lot of bread. Great. But lemaisa, thick matzah is kosher. Right? So the Magen Avraham says the thick matzah is kosher, and therefore he argues on the Ritva. The Ritva says that b'diyevet, if it's as thick as a tefach, it's no good. The Magen Avraham says, let it be as thick as a tefach, it still is going to be good. The Bir Halacha, in a very long essay over here, the Bir Halacha challenges the Magen Avraham. He says many Rishonim disagree with the Magen Avraham. And the Bir Halacha is inclined that if it's a tefach, it's going to really be a problem. L'maisa, right? Two lines on the bottom of this Bir Halacha. L'maisa, nered debi yoser mitefach yish leser af b'diyevet. Since the Ritva asers, right, the Ritva thinks even less than a tefach might be a problem. And right, he paskins if it's thicker than a tefach, it's going to be a problem. And you should not make it thick at all based on this Ritva. So what's going on over here is Shulchan Aruch paskins don't make thick bread. The classic Rishonim don't say that. The Magen Avraham says, according to classic Rishonim, Rambam, Rush, Rif, you can make thick bread, right? The Bir Halacha digs up these other Rishonim who were not part of the canon that was as known to the Beis Yosef. They were known, but not as well known. So these other Rishonim say that you really should not make the thick matzah.
So is this
stage one?
Is this an Ashkenazi Sephardi thing, or is it no?
Okay, so it's really not an Ashkenazi Sephardi thing. In fact, in Sephardi communities, most Sephardi communities would make brittle matzahs today. What they used to make at different times, in different communities, they switched over from the softer matzahs to the hard matzahs, with the exception of the Yemenites, who continued making soft matzahs forever. If you want to get soft matzah, you could get soft matzah from the Yemenites. Here in the States, in Brooklyn. They have everything in Brooklyn, right? My friend Meir Soloveitchik
gave
Shabbos Haggadah Drasha in KJ about this, like, 3 years ago or something, when he was still in KJ. The drasha was, how come I'm eating soft matzah this year? He went into Brooklyn. The idea of eating soft matzah might be that you can fulfill your Simchas Yontif more. It's more enjoyable. It happens that I ate soft matzah last year on Pesach Sheni, not on regular Pesach. I ate it on Pesach Sheni. It did not taste so good. So then they pointed out to me the reason why it didn't taste so good is, A, it was Pesach Sheni. This stuff is like a month old already. And if you want it to taste better, you stick it in the oven. Now, that point is an interesting point. Why is it that we moved from soft matzah to hard matzah? So, soft matzah, right, could have a problem, technically, the thickness. If it's going to be a tefach, could be a problem, and we have this one halachic issue that maybe matzah should be as thin as possible. Okay, that's one halachic issue. But there's practical issues. Soft matzah goes bad very quickly. Hence, if I'm going to make soft matzah for Pesach, there's no way I could have 8 days of soft matzah at the beginning of Yontif that'll last me all Yontif, because by the end of the Yontif, the stuff is going to be green and brown and moldy and yucky. Right?
See.
If you ever had a pack of pizza and you tried to leave it, right? Pizza lasts, what, a day and a half? Right? A day and a half might be the outermost reach. Right? This stuff doesn't last. Now,
so use it for the Seder.
So you could use a soft matzah for the Seder, but using soft matzah for the Seder really means that your Erev Pesach is going to be very busy. Right? Because the stuff doesn't last.
Correct.
So you can't make it a week before. The hard matzah has an advantage that it lasts. So far, so good. Now, the lasting is actually a halachic issue on a certain level. If you'll turn to the Tor in Tuf Nun Ches in the back, there's a, when do you start baking? When do you bake matzahs? So the Rishonim had a practice that they baked matzah Erev Pesach after Chatzos. No?
Right.
The reason why they baked matzah Erev Pesach after Chatzos is probably because they felt that you can't have a chalos of matzah without the possibility of real Isser Chametz. And until Erev Pesach after Chatzos with this real Isser Chametz, I can't have matzah.
Had they distributed it to so many people?
So the basic answer is the communities were smaller, people would go on their own, and they baked matzah Erev Pesach after Chatzos. By the way, you can still get Erev Pesach after Chatzos matzah. This stuff, if you think regular matzah at your $40 a pound is expensive, try to get matzah mitzvah. Right?
Yeah.
We're talking 150, 200 bucks a pound. Right? Okay, that's what.
And the soft matzahs are also more expensive.
Not much. Not much.
Okay.
So, the Torah discusses the practice of the Rishonim to bake the matzah on Erev Pesach, etc. And there's a question when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, when do you bake matzah? So most Rishonim had the practice they'd bake the matzah Seder at night. You'd come home from Shul, bake matzah, then start your Seder. That's a little bit extreme. And then still try to get everything in before Chatzos. Wow. Oh, it's a trick, right? Now, yeah. The Torah writes, V'anira isi be-Barcelona, 2 lines on the bottom, me-ha-medachtikin shay-ofen, koma she-tzrichon le-moed mi-kodem ha-moed, shim-yiz-arvo imo-mashu, me-chomed, she-yispato kodem yisiro. You see, if I bake matzah on Pesach, if I'm going to bake matzah Erev Pesach after Chatzos, and then to have my soft matzah, I'm going to continue baking matzah on Pesach, I'm playing with fire. Because what happens if a tiny drop of chametz gets mixed in? So before Pesach, if stuff gets mixed in, so I could deal with bittul before Pesach, and then there's a shav choser v'neir, whatever it is, but it's a lot better than possibly having chametz on Pesach, no?
Mm-hmm.
So making matzah on Pesach is very, very risky. Do not try this in your own kitchen, right? Don't try to bake matzah yourself, on Pesach certainly. So the Torah quotes that he saw in Barcelona, the medakdikin would bake everything that they needed before Yontif. Now, what that means, to bake everything they needed before Yontif, probably meant that they are baking harder matzahs already. Because one of the reasons why it goes bad, again, I'm not a baker, I'm not an expert, but apparently the difference between the soft matzah and the hard matzah has to do with the amount of water that you put in to the mixture. If it's going to be more like a batter, so it's going to be softer. Right? That's the definition of it. And also, it will go bad earlier. If you have less water, that's why the Chassam Sofer actually is the first one who really gives a recipe for matzah for how much water you put in. And the amount of water that you put in for a hard matzah is going to be considerably less. So the next issue that we have, besides this halachic issue from the Ritva, of the thick matzah possibly being a chashash of chametz, and maybe it asks even b'diyeva, that's a machlokes Magen Avraham and Mishneh Berurah. But the next issue is that you want the matzah to last longer, you make hard matzahs. Now, the practice used to be, like we pointed out, the matzahs were thicker than they are today. In stage one of hard matzah baking, they made thicker hard matzahs. If I make thicker hard matzahs, the only way I can eat that matzah is, basically, by dipping it in water and then eating it. Because it's going to be hard like a piece of wood, and the only way I could soften it is by dipping into water. Hence, gebruchs. Right? So the first literature about gebruchs comes up in the context of matzahs. The here the Shari Tshuva here in Simin Tov Samech. The Shari Tshuva speaks about the minhag of gebruchs. Right? The Shari Tshuva writes, what's the origins of this minhag? V'gam nira. Shascholas chomer zo yotza, mimasha yenoge mikodem lasos al pesach matzos avos harbe, avshalo haya kashir tefach, mikomakam hayo avos harbe, umehem hayu osim akemach la pesach aide greira beribaisen. Basically, they would make thick matzos and they would grind them, etc. And then, right, then the practice came up, because these are thicker matzos, the only way to eat these matzos is by dipping it into the water to eat them. Well, I got a problem. Because we said that thick matzah, I have to be choshesh, maybe, didn't bake fully through. If I dip it into water, then I can end up with chametz. On the other hand, if I don't dip it into water, I knock out my hakei yashinov. Right? If you don't dip it into water, so right, that could be bad. So how do I play with this? So the first literature about the he traces it, Rabbi Oberlander traces it in his article. Historically, the first literature happened at the time of the Chacham Tzvi. Rabbi Yaakov Emden quotes that his father, the Chacham Tzvi, who died in 1618, right? The Chacham Tzvi died in 1618. Chacham Tzvi tainer, don't be machmir on gebruchs, because if you can be machmir on gebruchs, you're going to destroy your Simchas Yontif. What he meant is that these thick, hard matzahs would break my teeth, and I can't enjoy them without dipping them in water. I'm going to dip it in water, maybe it'll become chametz. You're right, but it's a very far-fetched concern. So don't worry about that concern. Instead, have your cake and eat it. Enjoy your Simchas Yontif better than... So that is Gebruch's conversation one. Batya, you had a comment?
Is there somewhere prior to that statement that it says don't dip? It's just carefulness.
The dipping began in part because of the change from soft matzah to hard matzah. That's basically why the dipping began. Now, that change was made because you wanted the matzah to last longer and not to rot. Maybe because Jews are living in different communities, we could try to do a historical analysis of this. He's not a real historian. He just does halacha. That would be my guess. But we're talking not that long ago.
It would have changed the Manashtana, because the Einan room might be in the Philip HaMeh.
And they'd have to dip another time.
Right.
Right? Okay, that's also true. But then again, the Hasidim also changed it, because they dip an egg in the salt water. Don't the Hasidim begin the meal, you dip an egg in the salt water? Okay.
That's not
about gebruchs. It's an additional dip. Now,
so then
gebruch stage one was when they had thick, hard matzah. Then the people realized that this thick, hard matzah ain't working great for us. We have to come with a new plan. So they decided to try to make thinner, hard matzah. Now, the making of the thinner, hard matzah involved working on the dough for a longer time to thin it out. It takes longer. A thick matzah, plop, kaboom, you stick it in the oven, you have a thick matzah, no? But a thin matzah, you gotta work. You have to take your Valgerholtz, and you gotta go back and forth and back and forth and try to, right?
Don't they have a...
How many more minutes does that add?
What? So how many more minutes did it add? So we're not sure exactly how much more, but it added more time. Less than 18,
right.
What?
It doesn't take less time to bake.
It will take less time to bake, but apparently in the aggregate, it didn't balance out. And the concern, what he details in his article is, gebruch stage one was because they moved from soft matzah to hard matzah. Then we have gebruch's conversation one. But gebruch's conversation one, at some point people said, okay, you know, we're going to make them thinner. But making them thinner involved... Making them thinner involved more work, more time. And then, even though, Kira's pointing out that even though the baking is going to go quicker because it's thinner, but still, apparently it didn't balance out. And then people got upset. They say, you know what? It's not great. It's not a great solution. So they decided to come up with another solution, which is to work on the dough faster and then bake it. Well, that brings Gebruch's conversation number two into play. In other words, there are two different generations of the conversation of Gebruch's. Conversation one is about these thick, wood-like, hard, chunks of matzah. That's when the Chacham Tzvi said, Simchas Yontif. In Gebruch's conversation number two, the issue is because they're working so fast that maybe there's going to be a teeny bit of flour that just stayed there and never got worked on, right? And what? It goes into the oven, and maybe it remains a bit of flour. And that's why there's a conversation in Gebruch's number two. Additionally, there's a problem in Gebruch's number two that the Alter Rebbe points out in the tshuva that he wrote, that there was a concern that you take the matzah out of the oven and there's some flour floating around in the air of the matzah bakery, and flour is going to land on my matzah, and then when I put my matzah in my water, I'm going to end up with possibly chametz, no?
Yeah.
So that's the Gebruch's conversation number two. He points out that there are two totally separate conversations, separated by around 100 and chunk years over Gebruch, but the entire process of this conversation, right, is because what they are trying to do is make hard matzahs and still make hard matzahs, but do it fast. Now, today, we have hard matzahs that go very fast. That's because we have lots of people working in the matzah bakeries. That's because, right, we're just better at it, right? We're good, right? So, if that's the case, so what he argues, even though this might sound like conservative Judaism, he argues that maybe the whole minhag of Gebruch's doesn't make any sense today.
Of being
machmir for Gebruch's doesn't make sense, because it made sense at a time that there's some flour around. Today they have a glass partition between the flour sifting room, between the flour room and the bakery area. In all the good matzah bakeries, you'll have like a separation, no? That you reach your hands in to knead. Yeah, you ever saw the way they knead the matzah?
Yep.
And they don't do it in the same room. Why not? Because I'm worried that the flour is going to be in the air. Right, that's...
So then why did the Hasidim still keep it?
Yeah, so obviously they don't hold the Shtickle Torah. Obviously, he says that he thinks that the year he wrote this article, in 2006, he said he's in Budapest. He sent a friend of his, Rabbi Yirmiyah Katz, wrote a Sefer Mikvaos. He went to look in the matzah bakeries in New York, and Rabbi Yirmiyah Katz wrote him a letter that in some of the matzah bakeries of the best hashgachas, they still had concerns of flour floating around the air, and therefore it could be a problem. But the basic issue that we have is the practice of soft matzah is the old practice. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, just to go back for a second, the Ramah writes, right, in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber says, don't make thick bread a tefach. Right, that's Sif Hei, the bottom of page one. Right before that, you have Simen Tov Samach Sif Dalet. The Mechaber over there writes, ain osen srikin amutsu yarim. Don't make pictures on your matzahs. Don't make pictures on your matzah. Why not? Because it's a concern that I'm going to spend so much time getting exactly the right bird shape in my matzah that might become chametz, no? But the little holes that we make, that's permitted. You should make them quickly. Okay. Then the Rama writes, "V'yesh lasas hamatzas v'kikin v'lo pas ova kishar alachem ki ina v'kikin v'maharin lahachmetz." The Rama writes that you should make thin matzas. That's what the Rama says. Make thin matzas. Now, the context of this Rama about svikin hamatzuyarin means, and if you look in the Rishonim, the Tosfos Rabbeinu the Peretz, etc., what they are saying is as follows: people wanted to make fancy matzahs with like engraved pictures on them because it's hiddur mitzvah. It's beautiful, no? If my shofar, my tzitzis are nice, my tefillin are nice, I want hiddur mitzvah. So maybe I should have a beautiful matzah. How to have a beautiful matzah? Make the matzah look like the Empire State Building. I don't know. Right? You know, you make a nice looking matzah. So the Rama writes, well, there won't be a concern of it becoming chametz if it's very thin, because you can do it quickly then. If it's a thicker matzah and you're making an engraving, it could take more time. A thinner matzah, chick-chack, boom. Especially you have a, right, what's it called?
A mold.
That can be. Now, the Gemara does raise this issue. The Gemara says, Yomu kohas rikin asur masriki baisus mutar. And the Gemara raises this question. But the Ramah says, make thin matzahs. So a maisa, the Ramah says the matzah should be thin. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach writes that he thinks since the Ramah says to make thin matzahs, right, and not thick matzahs, what the Ramah is also saying is that you should make hard matzahs. But it doesn't say anywhere in the Ramah hard. It only says thin. Right? Lasas ha-matzahs rikikin, not thick. So Rav Shlomo Zalman understood what the Ramah meant is that you should maintain our tradition of the hard, thin matzahs. Rav Wozner writes that he thinks if you want to eat the soft matzahs, it's okay. He thinks that the fact that we eat hard matzahs is not really shteytnisht, right? In the halacha, it used to be that we ate soft matzahs. It could be that for technical reasons we stopped doing it. But if you want to eat soft matzahs, he feels it's okay. Again, I mentioned that Rav Shechter also said that Ashkenazim, if they want to, they can eat the soft matzahs on Pesach. So this is the basic development of this minhag. I don't know, I find this type of stuff interesting, The fact is, we probably could. Like I say, are all the matzahs equally good? So my guess is the answer is absolutely not. My guess is that our Yemenite brethren probably have better tasting matzah than we have.
On the first day of Pesach.
On the first day of Pesach, right.
On the first day.
So maybe that's the approach. I don't know. I think it's worth, thinking about. Lamaisa, how can we... Because it is a chumra da'asili de'kula in some ways. Because if you don't like the way your matzah tastes, you might not end up eating a full shear of matzah. Right? Matzah is a real mitzvah da'oraisa the first night of Pesach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you have good tasting matzah, right, you'll eat more of it. And that's a good thing. So, I don't know. It's worth thinking about. Thank you for listening.